This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 premieres Monday, May 13th on Exactly Right. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Barbara Gray, and I wish I was skinny enough to wear ugly-ass clothes.
I'm Brandy Posey, and jokes. There hasn't been a joke here in 69, 420 years.
I'm Tess Barker, and I've even lost faith in psychics.
And this is Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
Hello!
We got Barbara, Brandy, and of course, Big Tess. We got a show for everyone that's the fucking best. Come on, baby, it's time to hang out with your favorite ladies. Ladies and ladies, ladies and ladies.
Hi, welcome to Lady to Lady.
Woo!
It's the podcast that you're listening to currently.
You just heard the theme song. We're here.
Oh, hell yeah. That laugh in your ears. Oh, gosh. Did it warm your hearts
it's
when you heard it?
I'm sure.
It's been minutes since I've heard it in person.
Thank you for having me.
The author of My Life as a Goddess, a
which
memoir.
Which you can get today, just came out yesterday.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Guy Branagh.
I had to come and worship at the Temple of Three Goddesses if I was going to release this book. Can we talk about the great truth of Barbara's joke here, though?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I am obsessed with the point of, like, truly, truly, like, amazing-bodied people being able to, like... When we brought in fashion sweatpants, and I was just like, oh, God. And it really was on the asses of the hot that came about.
Yeah.
But I would also like to bring up the point of, I wish I were young enough to wear hot clothes. Like, 22-year-olds who, like, in L.A. summertime are wearing, like, knit caps and stuff just because their bodies work better.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it, and it's horrible. But I worship
a fashion scarf.
So frustrating. Yeah, I tweeted that because I was in Echo Park, and I saw a girl wearing mom jeans that were also floods. And I was like, fuck you. Oh, I could never wear this. In a million years, I could never wear this. But she's like a size two.
Who's always doing that to me is Rihanna. She's always convincing me that I can pull off like an 8 times oversized jean jacket. And I look like Charlize Theron in Monster. Like, I'm just too butch to pull off a Rihanna jacket, I guess.
But they define these shapes. Yeah. Like, those women with like the mom jeans or sort of like... I mean, the little gay boys in Brooklyn are all wearing, like, shirts that are gigantic perfect squares.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That just hang off of them.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, why are you doing this? Just yesterday, I saw this guy who was wearing this so poorly fitted t-shirt that his body was just so perfect underneath that you could still see his pecs and abs. And I was just like... No.
Yeah. It's infuriating. You're a low riding jogger. It's fuck off. Get out of here.
Yeah. I feel like that's what all of this whole normcore hipster thing is everybody's on coke, nobody's eating, and now we're all wearing mom jeans.
It's what's happening. She's like, I look like a fuckable parent.
Yeah. Think it's because they know they're hot. It's like because there's irony immediately because they're hot and the shirt isn't. It's like how I can't wear a cat's t-shirt ironically because I
there's not enough contrast. It's the, like, I'm young and I don't care. Like, it's the not giving a fuck the freedom that comes with not caring that makes you so hot, too.
I just put this on. I don't even know what I'm wearing right now. What are clothes even?
But also super intentional. So it's
exactly.
Well, also the thing of, like, if you're born in 1997, you get to say, oh, isn't this ridiculous to so much stuff. Here's the part of, like, fashion that has not come back ever, and I think we missed it, and maybe we were right, but was just the 1986, more 1984-85, every woman dressing like she worked at a bank, like ruffled collars, wide hair kind of thing.
Yeah.
And do you think that ever will show up, or...
I think it will show up again.
Yeah. I could see that being a Brooklyn thing.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think it might be happening in Bushwick right now. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about shoulder pads, right?
Yeah, we're talking like shoulder pads, but I definitely feel like a ruffly neck and hair that doesn't go up but goes out are important parts.
That weird, like, you look like a hostage in a movie in the
80s.
Yeah.
I think that's bound to come back. It's I think it's all bound to come back in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Which is like why I'm like, well, then what's going to come back after we've gone through all these fashions?
But I think there might have been like an actual important function for it in the 80s where like women truly were kind of entering the workforce.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if we'll ever
have
that.
Right, so we need to be like,
again.
Okay, I'm bulking. Like, I, you know, it's like a cat getting big so it looks like
something. Yeah. Like, yeah, I think that's what it was. Shoulder pads were. Yeah. I think it was
so
we truly were trying to look bigger. I think that's what high heels are.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. The the high heels point, I've never thought about it. Also, I've had like several friends get like pregnant and have babies in the past couple of years, and just that interesting dynamic of like women weigh what a man does when the baby's there, and this weird sort of like efficiency of nature. And I wonder, now that we have sort of like the nutrition that we need, are we going to start getting gigantic ladies that are the size of a man normally, but then like, you know, like bruiser ladies who then also can still carry a 12-pound baby?
Like,
this is the future of liberals.
Yes,
that's an Amazon. That's the future.
But the funniest thing about like 84-85 was that you had 14-year-old girls who were dressing like it was their first year, like you know, as a stockbroker.
Exactly.
I wonder if what was it
business,
the, was it
business.
Working Girl and 9 to 5, like, was it the movies that were informing it?
I think
I think it's all wrapped up in, you know, together, of course, like anything.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, cool, like, I want to be like my mom. My mom was, like, dressing up for work. You always kind of would dress like that a little bit.
Is that really? I don't feel like that was it, right? I was never like, I want to dress like my mom.
I think there were ways it was a weird rebellion against, like, post-hippie moms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But also, the post-hippies were, like, putting on... They were still putting on that stuff themselves because they were like, I was woke, now I make $1 million.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the weed and cocaine of it all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not going to wear any shoulder pads. I will say...
I'll put that out there.
I'm good.
I mean, if it... if I can pull it off, though, that's all. Depending on, you know, if they actually make it...
I think you have to be very petite to pull off shoulder pads. I think if you've got any kind of an anything to you.
I don't know, though, because when we filmed our Patreon thing, I felt good in my...
You look good.
I literally only was wearing that. Maybe
that
was the key.
Yeah.
Because I only had legs come out of the bottom,
That's very true.
I mean, that Liza with a Z look. I'm always going to be up for that.
See? That's not bad.
What does that
mean?
What's Liza with a Z?
Liza Minnelli.
Oh, just sort of like, you're wearing just like... a blazer and a leotard underneath it.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I do I really enjoy playing like business with sexy.
Yeah.
That's a look that I favor for sure.
Gotcha.
Especially because we don't have an office. So business, it's all dress up for us.
Exactly. I'm cosplaying office work no matter where I am.
Do you guys think this would be a good venture for me? I was trying to think, you know, I'm always trying to be like, all right, what's my get rich quick scheme?
Yes.
It's not going to happen.
What's your current scheme?
My current scheme is cosplaying. Like, cosplaying, you know, women
make a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, sexy cosplay.
I did not know that. Oh, sexy. Okay.
Sexy cosplay.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm thinking sexy cosplaying, like, Seinfeld character. Like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I'm going to do
more than one or just Elaine?
All of them.
Okay.
That's the whole idea. So I do a sexy cosplay as all the Seinfeld people. That's my first set. So, like, you do a Soup Nazi sexy cosplay, you Peterman. All the, like, maybe ones you wouldn't even think.
Oh, like your B-team.
Okay. Not all of them, but a few B-team people, like Kenny Banya.
I could see you doing a sexy Costanza, for sure.
Right. I think I'm going to try it and then, like, see if I can get some money off of that.
I mean, I think you could build quite an Instagram off of that.
Right, that's what I'm kind of thinking, is building an Instagram off of, like, doing Frasier. You know what I mean?
Just doing Tom Link, you know, he does the...
Yes.
He's killing it. Yeah.
Wait, who's a Kardashian guy, right?
Tom Link, no, he does... he's, like, a sketch person.
He was on Buffy.
He does the Britney stuff.
Grew up on the same street as me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, directed my sixth grade production of Annie. With Jillian Bynes was also Orphan. He does, like, when an iconic outfit comes out in the news, he does does like a cheap recreation of it, like a side by side.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like you have all these like I always have ideas for this kind of shit that I never follow through on. I'm like, I think this is easy enough to do.
Yeah.
That I could test it out.
The thing is, BuzzFeed and all of these places are going there because they know that they have to create content about it. But so much of the stuff that people are doing is just inaccessible to most of America. So if you can show up and be doing, like, sexy, gender-switched, like, Kramer.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, because cosplay, I'm like, I don't know who this fucking character is. You know, it's all very insular or whatever. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if that happens.
It can't hurt to try.
It'll be a fun photo sesh.
I think it's a great idea.
I have a I dressed as Kenny Banya because I did him for Stick or Treat a few years ago. So I know, I know I can do it.
I really like the portion of this movie that is Riley Silverman, the rain and spanning you into being good at cosplay.
Yes. Like,
please.
Yes.
Yes. Remember Eliza Doolittle? Fucking, yeah. There you I'm ready. I'm ready for this makeover.
Comic Con 2019. Here we go.
So let's talk about your book, Guy.
Yeah.
I wrote a book. It's called My Life as a Goddess, available yesterday.
We're all holding it in our hands.
This is a good cover, by the way.
Thank you very much.
I really love it a lot.
When I showed up to it, they just told me bring shirts, and I brought shirts, and they had like a background of corn for me because they were like, we heard you grow up on a farm, and I was like, not that kind. and so,
there's lots of different farms, y'all.
Yes. And so I was like to the man who was taking the photo. Also, let's be clear, I was late to the photo shoot. I was like, what if I did it topless? And he was like, okay. I was like, or I could be draped in something. He was like, what would you be draped in? And I have, I said, well, I have a lot of fabrics at home.
Yes.
So I went home to get a fabric. And then as I was driving there, I called my local florist and was like, can you make me a wreath of roses in the next 20 minutes?
Yes.
And they were like, yes. And so we got a ridiculous cover out of it.
Oh, here's how you know you're a goddess. You say the sentences, I have a lot of fabrics at home and I called my local florist.
I mean, you've got to have relationships. There are always those moments when you're like, because we feel uncertain with the careers that we have.
Yes.
And there are those moments that just sort of like let you know like you're okay. Mm-hmm. And when I was watching the second season of The Comeback, and I realized that when Valerie Cherish purchased flowers for Seth Rogen. Awkwardly, she did it from the florist that I was told to always shop from.
Oh, what a sign.
But yeah, it's just sort of like, all right, I am a functional lady in this town.
Oh my God.
I am making right choices.
This narrative is finding a theme. This is the motif. If I'm the only one finding it, here it is. Do you guys see that sometimes, though, too, where like you think you're finding signs, and then you're like, no, that was just me connecting things.
I tell myself all the fucking time that I saw a sign, and then I don't remember what it was. So I'm like, well, it kind of meant that much.
That it opened up your eyes.
Yeah, it did.
What is your relationship with, like, psychics, tarot, that kind of thing? Do you like it as play? Do you feel like it can guide you? What are your feelings?
I'm mostly play, I will say. I said yesterday on my Instagram, I was like, I'm so glad it's Leo season because everyone's talking about cancer season. I don't give two fucks about any of it. So I'm glad I don't have to care anymore. It's fun. I think it's fun for play. I do. Yeah. I did get a reading once that was like a month by month for a year, and it did like turn out interestingly like she did the reading, so I got another one for this year, and it's kind of, I think, more of a fun guide.
But I feel like that's also a game of like finding patterns and fixing them yourself.
For sure. Yeah, which you could do on your own, but it is having that external stimulus to kind of look for these totems or whatever.
Yeah, show it to me from a different point of view.
I think I was going through a phase where I was leaning on it a little bit too hard because I think if you get good news, it's really easy to be like, well, this is obviously true.
Yeah.
This is for sure going to happen.
Right. For sure, yeah.
So I think for a minute there, I was like just looking for good news in the crystal shop on Vermont. Which is my country album.
That cover looks suspiciously like the cover of this book.
Well, it is. Yeah, it's funny because Kristen Van Horn is the one who gave me the readings. And it's funny because I'm thinking, I got to go back and like write down what month she said for everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there were 2 months in there somewhere. She was like, okay, this is like a time when you're getting your finances together. It's so funny. I'm like, well, cool. I'll just wait till then. I'll just wait till then to get my money together. That's fine.
Exactly. What about you? How do you feel about it?
I think I can be a boy about it in like very sort of like there was one time at Chelsea Lately when John Edward, that psychic guy, came and like said that he was talking to Chelsea's mom, who's dead, And all of the guys on staff were like, oh, that's so gross. And all of the girls were like, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That said, like, if Lizzie Cooperman, like, read my tarot once, and the whole time I was just fascinated. I was, we're talking about me for 20 minutes?
Sign me up. That's definitely
a part of it. It's nice to be like, oh, wow, I matter enough that you're the witch in your brain told you about me.
A little bit of bullshit is good for me. Like a diet that has a little bit of just sort of like fake magic in it. I will always stick to more. Like, I like a nice crystal. I like the fact that when I go into women's shops with my friends now, there is like a little witchcraft section so frequently that I can fuck around with while they try on things they're not going to buy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think it's cool. I think I like the rise in it too, because for so long, like, I feel like that stuff all predated a lot of current religions and stuff, and the religion that is like so big in the world is very patriarchal, and I think it's just like us really rebalancing that stuff out. And
I think a lot of it being diminished has to do honestly with misogyny, because it is like I don't think it's any less bullshit than Catholicism. And Catholicism is witchcraft as fuck.
Yeah, exactly. You're drinking blood. Okay, cool. I got a rock in my bra. It's all the same thing.
It's good thinking about it that way, because I have been kind of annoyed with how intense it is everywhere lately, and because I'm like, it's religion, guys. Good fucking, it's exactly the same fucking thing. But I haven't thought about the fact that it obviously is way more, it's not as patriarchal. So that is good.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's that. And like, I don't know, I believe that I am a powerful being no matter where I get that from, whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine. And I've had like very weird psychic moments in my life where like on three different occasions I've like done a raffle where I'm like, I'm going to win this raffle. And I have won all three of those raffles. And it's always for very stupid things. But I'm always like, I know I'm going to win right now. And then it's always happened.
But
and like,
think about how much we have figured out about science in like the past 200 years and things that just seemed like weird coincidences like have reasons. So why isn't there that stuff?
Wouldn't you believe like, let yourself have that. Who cares?
That said, I will say, like, if you have any issues with anxiety, it can be a little tricky to think that you're psychic. And so that's something that I think can be like hard, like, because it's like, oh, you predicted something once, so then if you get a weird thought that something's gonna happen, you must be psychic and it's gonna happen
for sure.
So that I think that can get a little messy.
I think it's moderation with anything. It's like, let the mystery of it just be like a fun, like when you find a dollar or 20 on the ground and you're like, oh, well, that's exciting. Like, let your religion be like a 20 on the ground, I think, is my personal belief.
I like that.
I think my most new aginess is like my belief in like chakras. I'm very much believe in chakras.
That is interesting.
It's something I think, because I'm very into like, I run marathons and I do yoga a lot, and that's something that I have just experienced through physical activity. I've learned, this is going to sound so hippie to me, but I've learned to connect with like the different energy centers in my body, and I can feel them and access them and like understand myself and my life like through these different sort of channels of energy.
I mean, I don't think that's hippie dippy. I think it's something that a lot of us don't focus on.
Or connect to.
And it's weird. It is bizarre to me that we don't pay more attention to connecting to our body. Because we should. I mean, it's our vehicle in the world, but I don't do that, you know. And when I do get a lot of power from when I'm like, oh, I like can actually connect with this, but I don't think, you know, most of us just don't do it.
Well, Barbara, I'm pretty sure that's because your body as a woman is a public space.
It's not mine.
I have a personal invested interest in your uterus and what does or doesn't grow there.
Absolutely.
Men who are strangers get to decide what it should look like.
Yes, that is true.
Know. Absolutely.
Of course. Okay, well, that's good. They can deal with my chakras and let me know how those are doing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You guys just get back to me on those.
No, but like trying to be better about that and like be integrated as a whole self instead of having sort of like an alienated or distanced relationship from your body, it can be hard. Can I tell you a chakra story?
Please.
I don't know if I've ever told you this before.
Chakra story.
So I was working at Ashton Kutcher's production, now defunct production.
Of course,
company.
The person you think of first.
And one day, these two people just came around and they were drilling into the walls everywhere and putting up these plastic things that were either bright orange or essentially the electric blue of Tess's current dress. And I was like, what's going on? And I couldn't get anyone to explain it to me. And then a couple of weeks later, I noticed that Deepak Chopra's book was those same colors and was in our office. And then I read enough of it. It was his book about chakras.
Yeah.
And those were to open up our mouth chakra and our genital chakra so that we could be creative.
In the workplace? Yeah. Oh, boy. Well,
so you could suck your own dick?
Yeah, is that- that is exactly where your creativity lives.
Yeah, like your creative energy and your communication energy could work together.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And those are exactly the colors
so
I would
let
want
me
in
ask
my
you
office.
Something. Did you feel a change after these? After these plastic
just getting a
colors
boner in the meetings all the time.
Honestly, the biggest change that affected me was he stopped getting the free pop chips all the time, and I stopped constantly eating pop chips at work.
I don't agree with this. See, my chakras wouldn't like the lack of pop chips.
My mouth chakra needs pop chips.
Yeah. Snacks before chakras.
Yes, always.
We're going to take a bake.
A bake?
We'll let you get it. We'll be back.
Hey, we're back on Lady to Lady. I'm Brandy.
I'm Barbara.
I'm Tess.
And we're with Guy Branum.
Hello, good to be here.
The book is My Life as a Goddess, a memoir through unpopular culture. Forward by Mindy Kaling.
It is important to have more famous friends who you can leverage in situations like this. The number of emails I have had to send of a, hey, could you say something about my book?
It always
feels terrible.
Do you just sit down and do that like for 2 hours? I'm just going to email people.
Yeah, and it really does just sort of require like sucking up and saying like, I'm going to have to feel this way for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
And like a third of them, I will just be like, I can't, like, especially if, like, our last Twitter DM was something that I didn't follow up on.
Right. That's the worst.
Something like that. I have to be like, okay. But people are always great about it and nice. But about the book, it is my obligation to plug the book.
Yes.
But you making the statement of remembering that I'm a powerful being is sort of what the prologue is about, and the idea of, like, It's why I said my life as a goddess is like the story that I would always tell to my friends about this like Greek goddess who was like cursed so that she couldn't like be anywhere on the planet. Like everywhere would reject her because she had fucked Zeus and Hera was pissed at her. And like these peasants, like she wanted to get some water. It was a hot day. And peasants, like, kicked around in the water and made it muddy. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, left and was, like, just so angry at the world. And then she was like, hey, wait, I'm a goddess. And she turned around and she turned them all into frogs. And
oh, hell yeah.
This is
my kind of story.
That core idea of just, like, you're a powerful person. Mm-hmm. And, like, God knows you don't always use it in constructive ways. But when a problem occurs, remembering, like, well, I can tear some shit down in some way.
Yeah.
Like, I can make my presence felt. Mm-hmm. I think is really important.
Absolutely.
Did you, when you were young, because I've always known you, or you've at least come off to me as, like, a very confident person. As long as I have known you.
But I feel like everyone here, anyone in the comedy community would say that about. Because we are all built identities. Like, right. Who really had to sort of, like, say... Oh, I mean, and we're hardly the most marginalized of people, but we're not 27-year-old dudes in hoodies. Mm-hmm. Like, so we kind of had to prove and explain why we were there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think on the inside, it's always a hard story, but, like, you live your fucking life.
Right.
You know? And I think it has been a journey for me to be able to, like, live my life, but I've been doing that most of the time, if that makes any
sense. What's the other option?
Yeah. What's the other option? Like, I did spend a lot of time being scared in my 20s, but, you know, you get over it day by day, because you have to live in who you are always.
Yeah.
I haven't done any hallucinogens, but I hear they can help with that.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting, because we always think that somebody, my friend Whitney says to me a lot, like, well, you're just yourself. And I'm like, no, I'm fucking not. I'm terrified constantly.
Yeah.
I don't have a great self-esteem. I'm not that person.
But also,
I just talk a lot.
Our art form is so declarative, though.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, it's all sort of like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is, like, my perspective.
Yeah. I have an authority on these thoughts.
Right.
That I will put upon you with the amplification of the gods. I'm a booming voice. Hear my opinions.
And we put authority on our uncertainties at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 I mean, comedy's definitely made me way more, like, fearless than anything else, too. Because it's like you can apply those lessons to everything else, where it is like, who gives a shit if this person doesn't like me? Fuck you. I, like, just stood up in front of 30 people that didn't like me. I didn't die. If I'm not going to physically die, then I'm going to live.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. You kind of feel, and like so many people don't confront that part of yourself too, because it's like it is that weird caveman brain inside of you that's just like, if you are different from the pack and you're not accepted, that you're gonna be stoned to death. Mm-hmm. And once you like get past that reptile part of yourself, then you're like, oh, well, who really gives a shit?
Well, there also is such a wonderful amount of failure in what we do.
Yeah.
And like, I just remember so much that time when Barbara, you brought out the table and you had you speed dated people in the audience.
Oh yeah, it's a power violence show.
Yeah.
And it was just it was one of those things that I don't remember whether it connected with the audience or not. I just remember that it was so beautiful and it was like entirely your certainty mm-hmm. and skill. That, like, kept that thing going. And it was, like, so beautiful to watch. And, like, we've all tried stuff like that and had it fall out of our hands. Mm-hmm. And that's how you learn to have it not fall out of your hands.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, nothing has made me stronger in this world than failing as many times as I have. And we just do it every, you know, we're trying something crazy every fucking day.
Yeah,
I think stand-up is just learning to fail more and more gracefully as time goes on. Yeah. To the point that you don't even, people don't realize that you're failing, but you're still failing.
Well, everything in this world is confidence. I mean, because it's you're always Jedi mind-tricking everyone.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, everyone. You read about these, like, you know, I was just reading about that, like, literary con woman.
Oh, that was wonderful.
Or whatever.
I love a good con person story.
I know. I
haven't heard this.
Oh, I saw because Roxane Gay tweeted about it, but it was like some woman who had been in the literary world just like scamming. She was kind of just around, but nobody really knew what she did. And then all of a sudden she was asking for money and people gave it to her. I didn't finish the article because it was a long read. I didn't have time.
Sure.
But,
there's a wine guy like that. There's a whole documentary about him. And I laughed the entire time because he was like mixing. He was like moving all this money around and like mixing wines in his house and putting new labels on them and then reselling them for like four times the value and nobody had any fucking idea.
Amazing.
And his whole family had a whole setup in his house and he made millions of dollars.
But yeah, it's all
confidence.
It made
me laugh forever.
Yeah. She just acted like she belonged there and then she did. What happened in the end? Because I didn't get to the end of the thing.
Oh, she like still has a business where like people send her books and $3,000 and she tells you if your book is good or not.
Oh my god.
So funny.
And keeps insisting that she has like two books ready to go at Random House or something
like that.
Yeah, like I'm always made so uncomfortable by those confidence game stories because it's like when is it going to fall apart? But I also love the skill set of these sociopaths who can just scam people like that.
Yeah.
My brother is like, our whole life, he's always been, he's very good with money. He's very good with the stock market. Like, do you guys remember, did you have Warehouse, the music place?
Yeah.
Remember when you could sell CDs there?
Oh, yeah.
He always knew how to, like, he would buy CDs at a certain price and move them at a different price. Like, that's just how his mind works. And he'll be like, I don't understand how everyone's not doing this. It's like, cause, you know, no one else.
Well, we don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
That's like my dad's old business partner. His hobby was timeshares because he literally would buy them off of eBay, off of people that like did not want to own them anymore for like a 10th of the price. And he would flip them and make all this money off of them.
But a part of me is also like, I would just rather go on vacation than think about that.
Sure. It's just if your brain like is looking for that, if you're looking for like that, I need to understand this system inwards and outwards. Like that becomes the hook that you're obsessed with.
Megan Keister.
Great
scams.
Great grifter. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's doing anymore, but she was
back
grifting.
In her, I love her old border stories. Yes.
Bless. Amazing.
But don't you feel like we are scamming people's minds in a different way?
Yes.
Like, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sort of, but everyone takes comedy literally, so.
Yeah. I did just steal two umbrellas from the Watergate, so I feel very good about that.
So, guys, do most of these are essays, or is it?
So, like, basically, I didn't know what I was doing, and I was figuring I was just writing the book that every comedian writes. Mm-hmm. And then there was this one editor who I didn't end up working with, but she listened to my podcast, Pop Rocket, which is about pop culture.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, you should write about pop culture. If you write a book where you don't talk about why you love Canada and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you have done it wrong.
Yeah.
And so, like, the chapters are largely structured as me sort of, like, triangulating between, like, my life, myself, and a piece of culture to sort of understand it. Because one of the things is I feel like as a gay guy and a fat person, and for other reasons, like, I didn't know how to tell stories about myself because there weren't stories about myself. Uh-huh. And so I had to use sort of, like, these other stories that may not make the most sense in application to me to sort of, like, figure out who I was and what my place in the world was. And like the first chapter I wrote was about my dad, who died like 2 years ago, and our relationship through his favorite movie, which I had never watched before. It's this like Western from the 60s. And it was like one of the few like pop culture facts I knew about him was that that was his favorite movie. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, this is a movie about why we never got along.
Really? Yeah.
Is this the man who shot Liberty Valance? That's the chapter?
Wow. Yeah.
And
so
that's interesting.
It was this just sort of like perfect structure for like two people with different worldviews who kind of cooperate briefly and it doesn't work out well.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, and then with the rest of the chapters, I tried to do that and largely failed. And then also there's just one chapter where I talk about famous people because I had to talk about the famous people who I know, right?
Yeah, you got it. Every book has to have that chapter.
Yes. Yes.
That's fine. That's cool. I know where John Hamm eats brunch. It makes sense. You got to tell the people.
Where does he eat brunch?
Oh, I was just using an example. I don't know.
Tell us.
I mean, I also assumed that that was a real fact.
See?
No, I know. I know. I know where he...
I've been in the same bar as John Hamm, and I was very drunk and got very obsessed with talking to the only Backstreet Boy in the bar. So, you know where I lie.
Yeah. What Backstreet Boy?
It was Howie.
I took a spin class with Jeremy Piven one time at a flywheel. I sat behind him, and my score was higher than his.
Yeah, Piven.
I definitely was, like, burned hard in that class, because, like, fuck you, Piven. You don't get to beat me.
Yeah.
Felt good.
Jeremy Piven's not fun at all. I feel like, for me, the glory is always when you meet people who were sexual icons to you at 16 who are now fallen. Like, to me, that is beautiful.
Oh, I don't want that.
No, but it's wonderful. They're, like, accessible, or at least sad.
Well, see, I always went for the accessible ones, so I definitely don't want to see them later.
I still have it for Leonardo DiCaprio. I feel like he's still vulnerable.
See, Jeff Goldblum has just grown into it more and more.
Dear Lord.
I'm trying to think of someone else. Ethan Embry.
Oh,
I thought he was so hot.
Ethan Embry is a perfect example.
Perfect, yes.
Yeah. Earlier today, I was talking to somebody. We all know who it is. I will say who it is off the air. But what's his name from Can't Hardly Wait, but also from...
Seth Green?
Older one. Comes back from college.
Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell.
Yes.
She was basically like, Jerry O'Connell was like giving me vibes yesterday.
And, dude.
Yes. And, you know...
Yes.
Like, that situation is magical. The notion that somebody might leave Rebecca Romijn's Stamos for you, I think, is something...
I think you just mean Rebecca Romijn.
Yes, it's true. Rebecca Romijn O'Connell?
Yeah. He was in my Improv 101 class when I took improv.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so this is an amazing story. It was him, and this... Danny Pudi was in it, too, before Community. And he had just come from Chicago, and he was this, like, insane, amazing improviser, but UCB makes you start over at 101 regardless. And we were all just like, well, this guy's a star. Why are we in a class with him? And Jerry O'Connell, the first day of class, how you go around, you introduce yourselves, everyone's just looking at him, and he's like, hey guys, my name's Jerry, I'm an actor. And we're like, O'Connell? Jerry O'Connell. Because celebrities also in person, you don't realize, sometimes they don't look exactly like them.
They never look like how.
And he was like very skinny and tan, and in my head he's a little bit chubby still.
Right.
And so seeing him in person, we were all like, you look a lot. Is your name Jerry because you look like Jerry O'Connell? Are you the weirdo that did that? But then we were like, oh, it's actually Jerry O'Connell. And he was like the most game. He brought Rebecca.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He like was jumping up in scenes. I'd had a number of scenes with him where we were like dating in scenes. He came to every class. He was so sweet.
What the fuck else is he going to do?
You telling me he didn't have a lot on the schedule?
Yeah. It was great. And he brought Rebecca Romijn backstage to the green room because he wanted to introduce her to the class during our graduation show.
Did she act like it was an indignity or like
she was very sweet. She was like, oh, I've been hearing about you guys for weeks. Like, I think he's just like
adorable. That just gave me such a funny insight into their life. He's like at dinner, like, yeah, and then we have this one scene. It's like, oh great, Rebecca Romijn's gotta listen to fucking improv scenes.
I know. Stars are just
even
like us.
When you're Rebecca Romijn.
I know.
I feel like the untold truth of LA, though, is like, take a fucking UCB 101.
Yeah.
You'll get to spend time with a famous person.
Yeah. Absolutely. That class was wild. Our graduation show was packed to the gills because everyone knew that Jerry O'Connell was on our team. And we were all like, this is a lot. There's a lot of people here.
They're still together. They still are.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's I think they'll stay together forever because neither of them are really famous anymore.
Well, I mean, there is that thing of, like, if you synergize your fame. Mm-hmm. Like, do you guys know who Nico Santos is?
Yeah.
So Nico just started dating another famous person. And
oh my God, who? Is,
Zeke from Survivor. It's just...
I forgot. I saw Nico's like Instagram stories.
Yeah, and they're like, and like People was covering it. And I think it's just so weird to be like, and now one of my relationships is a thing that magazines care
That's
about.
That's bizarre. I can't imagine.
Yeah. I'm really interested right now in Cole Sprouse and Lily Reinhart, who play on Riverdale. They are dating in real life. And they play Jughead and Betty on the TV show.
They'll break up for sure.
It's fascinating, though, because, like, they were like, will they, won't they, for, like, a year and a half.
Right.
And they kept it very under wraps. And, like, it's interesting watching the publicists of the publicism of a relationship.
Yes.
And, like, how it's, like, concocted and done. It's very interesting to me.
Well, like, when it is one of those, like, businessy things that everyone understands what they're getting out of it.
Yeah, now, for sure.
How aware of the Sprouse brothers are you?
I never watched the Disney stuff.
Okay.
I know that I mostly from Riverdale. I know Cole. I don't know anything about Dylan. I know that he has a brewery in Brooklyn because I follow Cole on Instagram now.
Wait,
when
who are they?
They were like, is it Zach and Cody?
I have no idea.
It's some Disney show.
I think you're right.
They're
I
twins.
Think that's what they were. Yeah,
and they were around. Like
Nerdmelt a lot.
They were a Nerdmelt constantly. But I saw that one of them was like waiting tables, but maybe that was just him being down to earth.
Yeah.
Like Amy Sedaris?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
But I feel like less performance art even that and more just sort of like earnest. But I like when famous siblings, one of them gets an opportunity and the other does not. That's really interesting to me.
And very
The whole world of Sexy Archie. I do not watch it, but I have one friend, Nigel, and one of his responsibilities is to be aware of the CW for me.
That is goals as fuck.
Yeah.
I just want a CW affiliate.
A CW affiliate is great. Honestly, I'm surprised you're not watching it. The cast of that show, they're all so hot. It's fucking ridiculous.
I know. I feel like I would love Riverdale.
I think you would
I just
really like
can't
it.
Can't take anything else on right now.
Fair. I mean, Skeet Ulrich and Luke Perry.
I
and
love
they
it.
Are
Thank
both
God.
Both daddies in their 40s, and they're really fucking hot.
Luke Perry has been 40 for 40 years.
Also, him as Archie's dad, he's just like a really good dad. He's just like a really good man. I love Frank Andrews.
They have Mr. Weatherby.
All of it. It's all the characters.
I read the comics, so like I still need to watch it, but I have a little like you know.
It's also truly insane. There's gonna be a cult in season 3. I can't fucking wait.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's very weird.
But I do love just sort of like from a management perspective, having an on-site former teen heartthrob for mentorship purposes.
Yes, absolutely.
To be like, well,
that's
whatever
the
you're
reality
going through,
show I want to see.
Yes.
Holy shit.
And they kind of have that relationship. Whenever you see the cast together, like, they're very, like, the older ones are very protective of the younger ones, and you could tell that they, like, definitely are, like, I know what's happening. Let me like walk you through how to be this.
Yeah.
There needs to be someone to walk them through like leaving life. That's gotta be so weird to stop being a teen idol. Like, what are those first couple years like?
Rough.
Real full of drugs and alcohol.
I guess.
Generally the ones who manage to transition to being real actors, but that always feels like it requires such a delicate hand.
Absolutely.
But Barbara, you raise an interesting issue. You were like, or who said, I want to see that reality show? Because I feel we have evolved past good celebrity.
Yes.
I feel like everyone is too savvy for, like, it's either going to be essentially scripted like the Kardashians, or we got these rubes to come be rubes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just for my birthday, I made everyone watch Surreal Life, like, for the first and second, or second, I think third and fourth season.
That was the golden age of television.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Regina Flav, like, it was just so, it was, it felt really good.
Yeah.
God. Yeah, we'll never get that again, I don't think.
R.I.P. Vern.
I have to say, you know, Sean's really, I watched his sports bullshit is always on, and they do well. A well-made sports documentary, the entertainment world could stand to take a page from them.
30 for 30s are great.
Like, 30 for 30s, they treat it very seriously. They go into sort of like, it's just very honest and real because they're not actors, they're athletes. So it is a real moment, and there's just a camera there observing it. It's truly like a documentary instead of like a reality show where you've got a story producer kind of like manipulating everything.
Well, and the 30 for 30s are great too because they really do a good job of placing sports in like the culture overall too and what it means in that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they've given me more of an appreciation for sports, like some of the ones that I've seen. Like there's one about, oh God, what is the South African rugby team during apartheid and how when they were allowed back into the league and like how it like
was the thing that brought the country together because they won,
like,
for the first
like
year.
Like Invictus.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like a lot of it places sports in a way that it gives them an importance that I would not assign to them otherwise.
Sports and pop culture are very similar in that way, in that they're very easy to dismiss.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're on the outside. Yeah. It is like actually, these things do have a lot of importance in some people's lives. And it's not about the actual thing. Mm-hmm. It's about the context that thing had in your actual life.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something so interesting about, like, there came this time when I was like, it's not usual that I have emotions so big that I don't want to sort of, like, scrape around in them because I like talking. But it was, like, a moment where I was having emotions that were big enough that I wanted to be distracted and engaged but not have to deal with my own emotions. And there were sports on, and I found myself watching it, and then I was like, Guy, you're being a boy, stop.
How did it feel, though, to, like, do it?
It was like it served its purpose. Right. And, like, a couple of years ago, I had a friend, a gay guy, who was from Kansas City, and the Royals were doing very well, and, like, he made me watch enough games that I started becoming, like, slightly invested, and, like, I listened to baseball on the radio, which is not something I normally would have done. And that was, like, fun. I kind of got it because you don't have narrative tropes the way that you do in like scripted stuff.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what I want is for everyone from the challenge to go home and try to fuck or do a sexy, you know, fashion show.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think what we're basically saying is we need E! True Hollywood Story to come back.
Oh, don't we ever.
I had never truly appreciated Vanessa Williams until I sat across from the producer who was doing her E! True Hollywood Story. And it's like, hey, I love Save the Best for Last. I was excited that we had a black Miss America. But then I fucking learned about how, like, vocally pro-choice she was from the goddamn beginning. Like,
really?
And just, like, how, like, that stuff about the photos only came out because she wasn't just a black, like, first black Miss America. She was also shouty as fuck.
Oh,
and, like,
cool.
You, like, learn all this shit with an E! True Hollywood Story because they would spend months on those motherfuckers.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Yeah, they're
sorry,
like
Sean, we're recording. Sorry,
Sean, you just missed a big defense of sports.
We actually take a break, so we'll be right back.
Bye bye.
Welcome back to Lady Lady. I'm Babs.
I'm Brandy.
I'm Tess.
I'm here with Guy.
Hello.
Author of My Life as a Goddess, a memoir through unpopular culture, forward by Mindy Kaling.
Get it right now.
It's very exciting. There are lots of things in there. I talk about people and stuff.
Ooh, my favorite kind of books are about people and stuff. Oh, I will say,
person.
Related to whatever. I put out a fake tweet that said I had a book. I said I had a. A book coming out called Eat My Ass.
Forward by Judd Apatow.
It was like a really cute headshot of her. And then it just said Eat My Ass.
Yeah. And it said Forward by Judd Apatow. I misspelled Forward, so that's good. And my fucking... I get a message from my dad that's like... That's his cousin, who I've never met, emailed my dad about this tweet, about this fake book, and my whole family thought the fucking book was real.
Yeah.
So my whole family thinks I'm putting out a book called
Eat My Ass.
Yeah, they thought it was real. That's why this is big hubbub about this fucking fake
Barbara,
tweet.
Well, Barbara, now you know we got to go on Mandy, whatever fucking website, and get the book made.
I know. Yeah. I know. I'm going to write a fake forward by Judd Apatow.
This is going to be how you actually write a book because of a joke tweet.
I know. And it was so funny because, you know, my mom, I FaceTime with them on my birthday, and then they were joking about the book, and I was like, oh, you guys thought that was real? And they were like, yeah, because, you know, I did a good Photoshop. Like, the Photoshop looks good.
It does
and then
look
my
good.
Mom said, oh, I knew it was fake when it said forward by Judd Apatow. I was like, what, do you think I can't get Judd Apatow to do a forward on my book, Mom?
But it would be so wonderful to, like, self-publish saying it was a forward by Judd Apatow. Because what's he going to do, sue you?
Yeah, and then all it's going to do is get attention. So I might as well just do it.
Yeah.
But the whole notion of just sort of, like, your family believing that they get to have any opinion at all about the stuff that you do.
It's a constant thing. But any somebody family. Had a really good quote for the book. They're like, she's a freak in the street and the geek in the sheets. Judd Apatow.
That's the whole foreword. It's handwritten. Yeah.
So anyway, look for my book, Eat My Ass, coming out sometime.
I struggle
next year.
With that so much. Like, I love my, because my family doesn't even like, they don't understand what I do, you know? No. And so I struggle between trying to like actually tell them I have had some success, but then I border into them wanting to actually read and listen to the shit I've done.
And you're like, No, never mind.
Just do it. Please don't.
Yeah, I have a little radio show with my gal pals. Don't worry about it.
Everything's fine.
Radio show with my gal pals. That's definitely our tagline.
It's just so embarrassing to have your family know anything about what you do publicly.
Well, even the podcast itself, like I was talking to this guy who was like, oh, I listened to it. And I was like, you did? I'm like, I don't want to know that anyone listens.
Yeah, don't tell me. Yeah. I mean, except for you guys, if we don't know you personally, then always tell us that you love what we do.
Yeah, but don't, if I know you, don't tell me. Don't tell me you've heard
it. It's weird when somebody comes up to you with some fact about yourself that you don't realize that you've revealed. And then it's like, sometimes it's like you said it on a podcast or something, but also sometimes it's in a piece of material that you say every night and you don't even think about it.
Yeah. That happens to me all the time. Today, one of our listener tweeted at us and was like, quote, like, I'm about to say something embarrassing, Babs. And I was like, what was this about? Yeah. Will you tell me what this is about? I don't fucking know.
Like, what is this? What does this even mean?
It was about drinking 5-hour, by the way, energy.
Oh. That's not even close to the most embarrassing thing.
I know. I was like, thank God. Yeah. I mean, I just got to put it out there. All right. We're going to do a lady problem. If you have a lady problem, send it to us at ladytoladycomedy@gmail.com.
Lady problems. Do you have them? Lady problems. Do you have them? People have them.
Okay. Hey, ladies. Boy, I have a real lady problems on my... I can't talk. Problem on my hands. I hope you will stick with me as this might be a bit to unpack. I'm a lesbian in my late 20s and still find myself in love with my best friend. She's older than me by 2 years, bisexual, but more women preferring. We're both creative people, so naturally we dated for 2 years. It ended over 3 years ago. She's not an emotional person, and I am, so we've had plenty of disagreements before, but I feel like that's natural in a relationship, and overcoming it just brings us closer together. This is why the cutting off of the relationship by her has still perplexed me to this day. She has a plethora of medical issues going on. Trust me when I say it's a medical nightmare, even for her doctors. I believe she doesn't want to be with anyone as she feels like she will be burdening them. Telling her I love her and remaining with her regardless of knowing all her troubles isn't enough to sway her. The relationship ended, but we have remained close friends. I feel like I haven't gotten closure for the relationship even now. I've tried speaking with her about it, but it always incites an argument as she doesn't like talking about it, especially not about how she feels. Not even a crowbar could pry the feelings out of this girl, and I can't tell if she loves me the way I love her. She's the type of person who buys gifts as an expression of love and has gone above and beyond to spoil me sometimes. And even though she does buy other friends things, sometimes it makes me wonder if the special treatment I'm getting from her means anything or if I'm just reading into it. It should also be mentioned I'm the only person she's ever dated, and she has turned down countless men and women who've hit on her and asked her out before and after our relationship. My question for you ladies is, should I continue to nurture these feelings in the hope that there is something there, or face the fact that if bullets were feelings, my best friend is Neo from The Matrix? Thank you for putting it into those terms.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't have many lady friends to speak to, so I feel like just hearing your thoughts would be a relief for me. I love you all so much. Thanks for making me laugh every week. Signed, Sapphic Struvel in the Sunshine State.
Beautiful handle.
Sapphic or Sapphic?
Yeah. Sapho or Sapho? I say Sapho. Sapho.
Sapho.
Sapho.
Yeah.
So Sapphic?
I don't know what that word
the
is.
The poet.
Oh, okay. Got it.
There's a lot of lesbian porn named that has Sapphic on it.
Yeah, because she wrote kind of like lesbian homoerotic.
Okay. I see.
Okay, so I don't think this sounds like a friendship. I think this sounds like a relationship that you haven't let go of.
Yeah. To me, if you were a guy and this was a heterosexual relationship, I would tell this girl to run from you because you aren't taking any of her signals or respecting her wishes in any way. This is one of those, like, when you hear about nice guys that aren't actually your friends and they are just like waiting for your barriers to come down and the relationship that they've wanted the whole time to happen. And I'm sorry that I'm being very blunt while I'm saying that, but that's how that reads to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. It definitely seems like whatever it is, it seems like there's something there that you want that is not going to happen.
Yes.
And you have to like come to terms with the fact that it's probably not going to and how to move on.
Yes.
Whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, most exes, I think like exes either, if you're going to be friends with an ex, you need to have the level of broiness with them that you could literally watch them go off and hook up with another person and high-five them.
Yes.
Or you can't be friends with them at all, I think. I mean, otherwise it just gets mushy and you're putting yourself in a state of arrested development because you're not letting anything else come into your life. You don't even have a real friendship with this person because you do have ulterior motives. Nothing's happening at face value. You're not listening to her.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about her not being open to feelings. You're not listening to what she's saying. So as much, and
You're blocking both of you off.
Well, and I think this woman is giving mixed signals in ways.
Yeah.
But I think the fundamental question is, how much poetry do you want to write? Like, if you want to be in a constant state of pain, this seems like a great recipe for that.
Yes. Yeah.
But, like, it is neat, those situations. I'm not good at boundaries. But when I have just sort of, like, went away from someone and been like, I can't be around you. You shouldn't be around me. And then sort of, like, 3 years later, we are able to come together and have something that has a different shape, but is still sort of, like, nice and satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's totally possible, but I think it requires that break for you, for those feelings to diminish in both of you so that you can return to it like new people. And I think it's very difficult to have a continuous close relationship where you're trying to just, you're trying to say, well, you can't be best friends with someone that you want to fuck.
No. Yeah. And you're occupying space in each other's lives.
Yeah.
That you're not allowing that space for somebody else that they would actually want in that place.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a huge problem. You're both, and I know why, because you love her and you're terrified to see her with somebody else and probably terrified to be with someone else who isn't her because you know each other so well and all this shit. But you definitely, you know, have to let both of yourselves go. But what does this look like then?
Yeah.
You know, they're not friends. Like, how do you...
I would say I would cut it off cold turkey, honestly. It doesn't sound like it. I think it's really easy to talk yourself into, like, it's like any other addiction. Like, you just get a little fix here. Instead of going through the blunt force trauma of going through the pain of separating yourself from her, which of course is going to be a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
But instead of just living through that, you're like dying a different death every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really important to do for her too. If she's going through all this stuff too, it's like she could also just be like, doesn't have the energy to like tell you to go away too, you know?
Well, I think, and you know, who knows what's actually
happening.
I think she probably does. This other girl really does legitimately care for her. I don't think I don't think she's intentionally using her or anything like that. And she might have feelings for her too. But if you guys were going to be together, you would be together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, if I was presenting this problem and was like, yeah, I like this guy. And like, he gives me good presents sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't want me to be his girlfriend. That's it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's very obvious what the real answer is here.
I'll never forget. There was this guy who broke my heart. We had this really crazy, you know, whirlwind relationship. And then he kind of ghosted me and I was just obsessed with him for like 2 months. And I was talking to my friend Brett and I was like, I just don't know what's going on with him. And he was like, what do you already have your answer. What do you mean? Stop.
Unfortunately,
agonizing. You got the answer.
Yeah. We usually have the answer. We just don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I know. God, I feel like, I mean, so many relationships. I don't remember if she said how old she was, but
she's late 20s. They're both and the late girls, 20s. A couple.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like you're nearing the end of those. Like, my 20s were full of all that, like, I don't know, blah, shit. And now I am where at the point where I'm like, I would just rather be alone than be with somebody who's not sure if they want to be with me.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Of course, it's hard at first, but then you're going to get to a place where you do feel good because you're like, okay, well, this is on my terms. I'm not letting anybody string me along. I'm not wondering all the fucking time if someone actually likes me. You have to give yourself you have to know that if your language is that you need somebody in your face saying, I love you, I want to be with you, and that's what you need, then that's okay. To need that and wait for that to happen.
I think it's a trust thing too. It's like you've got to trust that the person that is going to give you what you want is out there, but you're not going to get to her because you're stuck on this person who's never going to get to
you. There's something so hard about when you have all of this past investment with somebody where it's not going to work out, but like you don't want to have to like do all of the work again. Mm-hmm. And I can definitely, like, in my mind be like, oh, I could find some half-assed functional person when I have this great passion with this person who hurts me constantly and who I hurt in return.
Yeah.
I think starting over is really scary. Like,
definitely.
I know that constant fear of like, but I'll never find anybody like this. Or we get really caught up in that. And it's not true. There's a shitload of people on this planet, and there's someone else out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if that's been your life for the past 4 years, it's really easy to keep telling yourself that narrative because it's been a while since reality has been any different for you.
So what do you guys think? I mean, it sounds like she's not going to make a clean break as far as just like not talking to her. It sounds like she's going to make some big declarative thing.
If you're going to do it, you're going to do it.
Yeah, I think you have not necessarily been genuine in your feelings up to this point with this girl, and I think it would be worth being like, this is what I want, and I'm sorry that I have not been honest in those feelings to this point, because you've been saying things are probably okay up to this point, just you're okay with being friends. Be like, I'm not okay being friends. You need to respect her answer when she gives it to you. And if that means that you then need to take a break, then you need to take a break. And I think she should be able to understand that too. You know, it's like, but you guys just need to be honest with what this relationship is on both sides.
Yeah. And I will say, if that happens, if you get to the point where you're able to like make the break, you've got to resist the temptation to contact her. You know, you guys are friends. So you probably see each other things, and obviously you're not going to like ignore her, but going to have to resist the temptation to dig at that thing.
Yeah.
I think commercial fishing, I think going to Europe and living for a year, teach English in Asia.
Yeah.
Like just doing something where you just remove yourself from that. Like you're still in your 20s. Have some fucking life.
Yeah. Mm.
And then if that bitch wants you, she can come learn how to deal with your life.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, I love the idea of like fulfilling one of those fantasies that you never act on because of the things that you think are tying you here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also love that your first instinct was commercial fishing.
Yes.
I mean, it's a dangerous, but like high risk, high reward.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Also, it's Florida. There's a fair amount of fishing going on.
Yeah. Deep sea fishing is real fun, actually.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're not tied down to your job or anything, do something really drastic.
Get outside of your bubble.
Change up your whole life. Do some fucking. This is not, to quote the running magazine I just read, this is not your practice life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But it's not. Get out there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of the last, like, crush I had like that. Oh, yeah. I got it. All right. Mm-hmm. Block it in my sights. He's getting married this year. Congrats.
You said love language. Did you read that book?
No, I haven't read it.
Oh, has anyone?
Mm-hmm.
The love language. I just want to know whether it's valuable or not.
I don't know. I mean, when somebody told me all of them once, like, let's see if we can look it up.
I mean,
really
that
quick.
Is the best way to consume any of those sort of like fad psychology books.
Yeah.
Is to have someone over
bullet
coffee.
Points.
Yeah. Or a nice Wikipedia entry.
Yeah. Because that's what it basically is. A book that should have been a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah. There should just be like informational brunches where somebody just like holds court and just. Have a mimosa and I'll explain to you your love languages.
That's such a good idea. Yeah, I'm having a brunch on Saturday about my love languages.
It's like a TED talk I actually want to go to.
Sunday about buying a house.
Let me talk to you about escrow over some pancakes.
Wait, I'm going to see if I can get them really quick.
I know there's gifts, a physical affection.
Yeah, verbal.
Verbal.
What's someone told me them, and I was like, yeah, I want all of that.
I know.
I want literally every single
that's
one.
How I am with all this personality shit, I'm like, yeah, I'm an extrovert, but I also just want to be at home with a book.
We're both. We're all everything.
Yeah.
But like, is it like to different layers? Like, I don't give a fuck about giving gifts, ever.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like what you prioritize.
Yeah, it's like, I don't give a fuck about gifts. Like, I
don't give a fuck about gifts, but I give a fuck about someone thinking about me, like, someone knowing me well enough to give me a good one.
For sure.
I don't need it all the time.
No.
Yeah.
But I would like to know that they know me well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more of an action-oriented person. Like, I don't give a fuck if you tell me you love me. Like, you fucking should. I'm great.
Yeah,
but
that's like, almost, I need you. It's kind of weird too.
Do things. Yeah, like do things for me that make my life easier.
Yes,
it's like basically the easiest, like the way that I want. one.
I definitely action speak the most.
Yeah. I mean, I think if verbal is an option, I'm always going to be verbal.
Yeah.
But the point of just like wanting to feel seen, I think, is you know, like known.
Yeah.
Is important.
Like see the actual you that maybe other people aren't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we'll do it quick. So words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. You know, hearing "I love you" and other compliments. Mm-hmm. Quality time. This is all about giving the other person your undivided attention. Mm-hmm. Unlike the words of affirmation language, talk is cheap, and being a loved one's main focus leaves quality timers feeling satisfied and comforted. Mm-hmm. Distractions, postponed dates, or the failure to listen can be especially hurtful to these individuals. Mm-hmm. Receiving gifts, mm-hmm. acts of service. So this is
service, yeah, warming, yeah.
Speak louder in the words, and physical touch.
Mm-hmm. I like all of these. Yeah,
which is coming. Yeah. Yeah. I want all of it. I want all of it. I want the world. I want the whole world. I want to lock it up.
What is that?
It's Willy Wonka. That's not even a crazy one.
No, I just like don't know the songs. Oompa, that's the one that sticks in my head.
We can't even count that as a musical because Gene Wilder is in it.
Do we not count? We don't.
Why
we don't
that count?
But Brandy can't hate it because Gene Wilder.
No, I don't. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I just like don't. Yeah. Those like those songs. I just like.
You're missing out on Fergie. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, there's almost no song that I like plays in my head more often than that.
Yeah,
because
when in the movie,
it's with the Golden Gooses.
Yeah,
geese. I want to goose to lay gold eggs for Easter. Yeah. She's fucking insane, and she wants
it. Salt.
It's Fergie Salt.
She wants it now. That's how she goes out.
Oh, I don't even remember
presents
that.
And
And then she gets dunked on the. She goes up, and they're like bad egg, and she gets fucking.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that part. Yeah, I just don't remember the song.
I know you're like I remember the revenge part.
Yeah, yeah. I remember how they all go out. Yeah, I think
that's a great song.
I think at that point I was still like, yes, roll juice the bitch, juice that blue bitch. I think
that's
I was still
so
focused.
Great.
That was Violet.
Yes, I think I was still focused on Violet turning Violet.
So good.
Fucking ditch this bitch and get with a hero. No, I don't know.
Nah. To sum it up.
Yeah.
I don't know what that meant.
You were just hosting a daytime show very briefly.
That's how shoulder pads are going to come back.
There's a lot of things combined.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but thanks for writing to us. Thank you guys for listening to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And get fucking Guy's new book, My Life is a Goddess, available now wherever books are sold.
Thank you guys so much for having me and pimping the book. I really appreciate
it. Yes.
Yeah. Pleasure.
We love you so much, and we're very excited to read it, and thank you for coming on.
So proud of you.
Thanks so much.
Published author.
This is the last day you can get the... go to patreon.com/ladytolady. And August 1st is the last day you can sign up for our $10 tier where you will get the prayer candles.
Yes.
So you can
plus
pray.
Plenty of bonus content.
For just $10 a month, they get those prayer candles.
Aren't those beautiful?
They are amazing. It was the first thing I saw when I came in here. I assumed that they were one-offs.
No, you can get those, and that comes with a bonus episode every month and a bonus session every week.
It's 2 cups of coffee a month. Isn't this quality content worth that to people?
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
You heard it from the goddess.
So this is the last thing you can get. You better fucking go on there right now or else you're out of luck.
I can do it,
basically.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Can't get enough of us? Subscribe to our Patreon for exclusive bonus content, access to our first 100 episodes, and more. Go to patreon.com/ladytolady now to sign up. As little as a dollar a month keeps a roof over the glam cave and keeps you laughing, even when your coworkers stare. That's patreon.com/ladytolady.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Lady to Lady Comedy. Join our Facebook group, Lady to Lady Podcasts, to chat with other fans about episodes or even post your own lady problems. Check out our website, ladytoladycomedy.com, for show notes, videos, and merch.
And follow our individual accounts, Babs Gray, Brandazzle, and Testify Barker for jokes and info and where you can see us perform live. And if you want to send us snacks, stickers, or a lock of your own hair, I don't know, whatever, our P.O. Box is 412-794 Los Angeles, California, 90041. And please, leave us a review in iTunes, but only if you like us.
We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.